Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, fake news and foreign policy. We're going to have a series of interviews from individuals and news clips that give us a different perspective, a different reality, that are not fake, but challenge the mainstream and corporate media's completely fake take on one example, Syria. Right now, if you were to look at the front page of the New York Times just in the last week, you would see more than a dozen stories all talking about how what is happening in Aleppo is not rescuing the citizens who've been held captive, who've been submitted to torture, rape, and murder, but rather as if somehow the Russians, the Iranians, and the Syrian government that is liberating Aleppo are at fault. At the same time, what is happening in Iraq and the retaking of a city that had been taken by ISIS, well, there it's liberation. There we're not focused upon any of the casualties within citizens, but rather how gallant and brave the well-trained Iraqi security forces and the Shia militias are in their efforts, guided by, of course, America and its airstrikes. Both cities have been in the hands of terrorists. Doesn't matter whether they're called al-Nusra, which was originally al-Qaeda, or ISIS, they're still terrorists. They behead people. So why is it that the media looks at one of the retaking of a city as negative and the other as positive? That's how fake news is created, and that's based upon policy. I want to begin, before we go to our first clip, with some comments directly from Chris Hedges from Truthdig about fake news. And he says this. He says, "The media landscape in America is dominated by fake news, and it's been this way for decades. This fake news does not emanate from Russia, the Kremlin. It's a multi-billion-dollar-a-year industry that is skillfully designed and managed by public relations agencies." He says this, "The corporations that own media outlets, unlike old newspaper engines, view news as simply another revenue stream. Revenue streams compete inside a corporation. When the news division does not make what it seems is enough profit, the axe comes down. Content they are not unless they have money. Content is irrelevant. The courtiers in the press, beholden to the corporate overlords, cling ferociously to their privileged and well-compensated purchase. Because they slavishly serve the interest of corporate power, they are hated by America's workers, whom they have rendered invisible. So they deserve the hate they get. Most of the sections of a newspaper, the lifestyle, the travel, the estate and fashion, among others, are designed to appeal to the 1%. They are bait for advertising. Only about 15% of any newspaper is devoted to news. If you were to remove from that 15% the content provided by the public relations industry, inside and outside government, news falls to a single digit. For broadcast and cable news, the figures for real, independently reported news would hover close to zero. The object of fake news is to shape public opinion by creating fictional personalities and emotional responses that overwhelm reality. Hillary Clinton, contrary to how she often was portrayed during the recent presidential campaign, never fought on behalf of women and children. She was an advocate for the destruction of a welfare system in which 70% of the recipients were children. She is a tool of the big banks, Wall Street, and the war industry. Pseudo-events were created to maintain the fiction of her concern for women and children. her compassion, and her connections to ordinary people? No. Trump never has been a great businessman. He has been a person with a long history of bankruptcies and shady business practices. But he played the fictional role of a titan of finance on his reality television show, The Apprentice. The pseudo-events which flood our consciousness are neither true nor false in the old familiar sense. The image that we see is frequently a pseudo-events image. Reality is consciously deformed to easily digestible sound bites and narratives. Those involved in public relations and political campaigns and government stay relentlessly on message. They do not deviate from the simple soundbite or cliche they are instructed to repeat. Now, put this in context as far as Syria. For me, all of this became a point of contention when I saw that Syria had a long history of being the breadbasket of the Middle East. Then they went through severe drought, which many other countries did as well. And when they refused to sign a deal, Assad, to allow a pipeline carrying natural gas to go through his country into Turkey, that's when it was time for regime change. And we never ask ourselves, who benefits from regime change? What is the real object? Is it oil, as it was in Iraq? What is it? Is it stopping Africa from going to a gold denier instead of a dollar for all their transactions in oil and other commodities that Gaddafi was advocating? So I look for who benefits. Well, the NATO alliance countries and their industries that make war machines, they benefit. And those who want that change benefit. But what about the average person? They're unaware of what's going on. So we're going to bring you that awareness. We are going to challenge everything you've heard about the White Helmets being a peaceful group of great people. They're people who feel that they are terrorists. Now, 60 Minutes just did a piece on this. How could, with all the resources 60 Minutes had at its disposal, how could it have missed this? But it did. It engaged in pure, misguided, fake news, pure propaganda. But so has many of the Pacifica programs and the mainstream media all lied on this. Let's begin also by looking at reality. When ISIS was being funded and had these long truck convoys, as many as 12,000 going from Turkey into Syria, stealing its oil, going back and selling the oil on the black market for $20 a barrel when it was otherwise going for $80 a barrel, no one in America and the media questioned that. When it was found in WikiLeaks cables of John Podesta to Hillary Clinton that she knew, Hillary Clinton knew, that Saudi Arabia and Qatar were arming, funding, training, and protecting terrorists in Syria, this was kept from the public. That meant that the United States and its different departments of intelligence and Defense Department were aiding, abetting active terrorists, as were the client states, such as Saudi Arabia. Why didn't this become an important story? But it didn't. Why didn't America in 14 months bomb one single one of those convoys? It didn't. That provided then about $1 to $4 million in cash per day, every 24 hours, to ISIS to carry on its war efforts. So you see, we've been lied to from the get-go. Now, let's hear from the Syrian social media campaign. This is a person, Anissa, who is going to give us a different perspective. Please listen.
Final messages are flying out of Aleppo, Syria. They're taking social media by storm simultaneously. It almost looks like a coordinated PR campaign.
No place now to go. It's the last place.
This may be my last video.
This might be close to, if not the last, communication.
It's the last time that I talk to you.
It's almost as if they were hoping these final messages would trend and get picked up by mainstream media.
Bombs are everywhere. People are running They don't know where, just running.
We are here living a genocide, literally.
People are executed, it's as simple as that.
It's almost like these are just innocent civilians with no message, no strategy, no politics, just people simply fighting for their lives. One day, saying goodbye to the world on social media, the next day, giving interviews to BBC, CNN, and Al Jazeera, all in prime time. Well, they're not. These are activists. Some of them just recently joined Twitter and clearly support the revolution. They have thousands of followers. Some call themselves journalists and are verified on Facebook, like Bilal Abdul Karim, an American who has no problem pushing al-Nusra propaganda. You know, the rebels. This guy is a member of the White Helmets, who were founded by a British ex-military officer and have been funded with millions by the US and UK. And then there's a little girl named Bana, also joined Twitter not so long ago, in September. She's already verified and has over 200,000 followers. Bana is 7 years old and tweets in perfect English from the heart of East Aleppo with a little help from her mommy. She, of course, also had a final message just in time. So what do all of these people have in common? They want you to think there's one side to this story, one truth, that Assad is randomly going from city to city and killing his own people for some crazy reason with the help of Russia, even though the whole world is watching every step. They want you to think that these civilians pouring out of Aleppo are running from genocide committed by the Syrian army, and those who celebrate on the streets are dancing on children's graves, while al-Qaeda-infiltrated rebels are bravely and heroically defending civilians in East Aleppo. The question is, do you buy it? Because millions of people do.
Now let's go to a Canadian journalist, Eva Bartlett, who we've had on this program, who will give you her perspective, being a journalist, not being influenced by the minions within the mainstream media. Here's her perspective, having been in Syria and all these war fronts multiple times and fluent in Arabic.
I would ask you to follow the voices of people in Syria who, like my colleagues here said, they want you to speak the truth. They're tired of lies. They're very well aware of the lies that our media is purporting and that our human rights groups are purporting. They want an end to the violence. They don't want this war to continue. They didn't ask for this war. But as my colleagues stressed, Syria is a sovereign nation. It has the right to fight against terrorism. And we know that 101 of 193 UN member states have sent terrorists to Syria to slaughter and destroy. So Syria is fighting a war against terrorism. It's winning in Aleppo. And hopefully either the terrorists will accept a deal to be transported out of Aleppo. Hopefully they will participate in the Musalaha, the reconciliation, will lay down their arms, will take the amnesty offered to them by the government, and which has been taken by thousands of former militants. And hopefully, above all, the U.S. will stop supporting terrorism and stop funding terrorism. And hopefully this new bill will take fire, will be supported, and actually it will be impossible to fund and armed mercenaries from FSA, Ahrar al-Sham, Nur al-Din al-Zinki, and all the colors in between, because they're all the same terrorists. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Eva. Very informative. Thank you very much. Now we are open to questions, if there are questions. The gentleman in the back.
Thank you very much. I'm Christopher Ronneberg with the Norwegian newspaper Aftenposten. A question for, or two questions for Ms. Bartlett here. As a journalist, I'm sure you can appreciate getting other impressions than empirical impressions from the ground. When you talk about the Syrian people and what the Syrian people want, how can you quantify that? Do you have any independent surveys where you can actually document that? And secondly, you talk about the corporate media, the Western media, the lies, and all of this. Could you explain what you think might be the agenda from us in the Western media, and why we should lie, why the international organizations on the ground should lie, why we shouldn't believe all these absolutely documentable facts that we see from the ground, these hospitals being bombed, these civilians who are talking about the atrocities that they have been experiencing. How can you justify calling all of us liars?
Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, there are certainly honest journalists amongst the very compromised establishment media. Let's start with your second question. So, international organizations on the ground. Tell me which ones are on the ground in Eastern Aleppo. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you, there are none. There are none. These organizations are relying on the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is based in Coventry, UK, and which is one man. They're relying on compromised groups like the White Helmets, which let's talk about the White Helmets. The White Helmets were founded in 2013 by a British ex-military officer. They have been funded to the tune of $100 million by the US, UK, and Europe and other states. They purport to be rescuing civilians in Eastern Aleppo and Idlib, yet no one in Eastern Aleppo has heard of them. And I say no one, bearing in mind that now 95% of these areas of Eastern Aleppo are liberated. The White Helmets purport to be neutral, yet they can be found carrying guns and standing in the dead bodies of Syrian soldiers. And their video footage actually contains children that have been recycled in different reports. So you can find a girl named Aya who turns up in a report in month, say, August, and she turns up in the next month in two different locations. So they are not credible. The SOHR is not credible. Unnamed activists are not credible. Once or twice, maybe, but every time, not credible. So your sources on the ground, you don't have them. As for your agenda, not your, but the agenda of some corporate media, it is the agenda of regime change. How can the New York Times, I was reading it this morning, or how can Democracy Now!, which I was reading the other day, maintain until this day that this is a civil war in Syria? How can they maintain until this day that that the protests were unarmed and nonviolent until, say, 2012? That is absolutely not true. How can they maintain that the Syrian government is attacking civilians in Aleppo when every person that's coming out of these areas occupied by terrorists is saying the opposite? So that's with regards to your question on lying Western media. How do I quantify the support of the Syrian people? The elections. In 2014, the Syrian people held elections. The voter turnout was 88%, including people in Lebanon, where I was during the elections in Lebanon, which were actually ran for 2 days, extended hours, people walking for kilometers to reach the embassy, including people who flew from their own countries like mine, which has criminally shut the Syrian embassy so that Syrian people have no rights, and including people within Syria who braved a torrent of terrorist mortars and missiles on election day. And yet, voter turnout rate was something like 88%, I believe, and the election, the results were 78, I believe. I
think Tim Anderson gives you the opposite.
Okay, I might get the turnout wrong. So the results,
74
participate, 88. Okay. Anyway, the point being, overwhelmingly, the people support President Assad. That's based on elections, based on my own travels. Okay, so that's subjective. But as I said, I've traveled around Syria, talk with people of all faiths, all walks of life, and there are people that want change in the government. We're not pretending they don't want change. Everybody wants change. But in terms of support of the government, the point is they don't see President Assad as the problem. They see the problem as terrorism. They see elements of problems in the system that they have there. But President Assad, they don't see as the problem. They actually overwhelmingly support him. So I'm basing it on their choice in their leader, and I'm basing it on my interactions with people in Syria and Lebanon.
Now let's hear from a person, Ryan Dawson and Tala Alan, on destroying the propaganda.
ISIS did not enter the Yarmouk refugee camp from an outside source. In fact, ISIS's presence in the Yarmouk refugee camp is the result of rebel factions which converted to ISIS within the camp for the sake of a bigger paycheck.
18,000 residents remain trapped inside, including 3,500 children. But what exactly is Yarmouk, and how did things spiral out of control? Yarmouk is the largest Palestinian refugee camp in Syria. It was established in 1957 and became one of the most densely populated districts in the Syrian capital.
Yes, and it was the Assad government which made it possible and accepted Palestinians as fellow Syrians.
In 2011, when the Syrian uprising began, 150,000 people lived in Yarmouk, mostly Palestinian refugees. Several of the camp's residents protested against President Bashar al-Assad, and many were jailed or killed.
Right, and so out of 150,000 people, quote-unquote, several protested and were either arrested or killed. I mean, is this meant to be a flattering statistic or something? I mean, seriously, what point are you trying to make here?
In 2012, anti-government rebels took control of the camp. The government, along with its Palestinian allies, responded by placing the camp under siege.
Right, so let's just be clear here. It was the so-called rebels which turned this Palestinian refugee camp into a militarized zone. I mean, how do you think the government was going to react? Of course they're going to cordon off this area. It's a threat to the rest of the city.
For more than 2 years now, life in the besieged Yarmouk refugee camp has been unbearable. And now with ISIS in the picture, it's only gotten worse. Here's what journalist Talal Alian, who's in touch with camp residents, told me.
There hasn't been food in the camp, save a few aid distributions here and there for almost 2.5 years. There hasn't been running water in the camp for over 200 days. The only source of water within the camp has been taken over by ISIS. Moreover, medical aid and medical facilities within the camp are almost entirely non-existent. The only running hospital within the camp was shelled a few days ago.
Notice that he hasn't mentioned who shelled the camp. If it was the Assad government and it was confirmable, they would have said it for sure, that the Assad regime had shelled or barrel-bombed the area. But they didn't mention that. And that's because it was the rebels who have shelled it, because they're fighting for their share of the camp. They're just another competing gang against the ISIS presence in the camp.
To make matters worse, Yarmouk's residents are caught in the middle of fierce fighting. From above, the Syrian Air Force has dropped barrel bombs on the camp several times. And on the ground, battles rage between rebel forces and ISIS fighters who've teamed up with Al-Qaeda affiliate Jabhat al-Nusra.
Right, so the rebels have teamed up with Al-Qaeda in order to expel ISIS. Except this is really weird because ISIS derives its political and military origins, rather its political military origins, from Al-Qaeda. So I mean, what is this? Are the rebels meant to be different or something? I mean, you've just contradicted yourself here.
ISIS snipers have fired from building rooftops, and there have even been reports of beheadings.
Yes, and all the so-called moderate opposition gangs are also beheaders. It's well known that they behead people. They behead people on sectarian grounds. They behead people on the grounds of a woman fighting back against them, or a child being pro-Assad. I mean, honestly, this is ridiculous. Where are you? What point are you trying to make here? But I guess when rebels do it, it's a more of a moderate beheading than an ISIS beheading. I guess when ISIS does it, it's an extreme beheading versus a moderate beheading.
To further complicate things, the Assad government has reportedly offered to provide weapons to Palestinian fighters in the camp against ISIS.
Really? And how is that a bad thing at all? I mean, you've completely glossed over the fact that many Palestinians have actually formed militias such as Liwa al-Quds, which has sided with the Assad government, made up of Palestinians who were living in Syria, who have identified Assad as their protector. But you've glossed over that fact. And of course, this Liwa al-Quds, for example, which is made up entirely of Sunni Palestinians, played a major role in liberating Aleppo from these moderate beheading Daesh-affiliated scum. I mean, of course, you'd be jumping up and down if it was the rebels which gave these people guns, obviously to kill government troops. But no, it's a bad thing when Assad gives them guns to protect themselves.
UN officials are calling for humanitarian access and the safe passage and evacuation of civilians to be allowed.
Yes, and the Assad government itself asked for civilians to be evacuated from the area and for aid to go in. And guess what happened? The moderates and Daesh, of course, hopefully by now you understand there's no difference, don't allow it. They use these Palestinians as human shields.
The main UN agency on the ground says 94 people have been evacuated from the camp and that no aid has been able to enter since April 1st. In the meantime, the nightmare in Yarmouk drags on as its residents continue to suffer and starve with no end in sight. Many are asking, why did it take ISIS entering Yarmouk for people to wake up to this ongoing catastrophe?
بس اتذكر حياتي انا 4 كثير كنا عايشين امان.
Did you just see that? Did you just see those subtitles? The lady basically said that 4 years ago, when this civil war wasn't happening, she felt safe. Now, under whose leadership was she feeling safe? She was feeling safe under the Assad government's leadership. I mean, honestly, I mean, this is how you get caught out on your own lies. I mean, you try to manipulate information and say, oh, look, Assad's like this, Assad's like that. But then you slip up with little things like that. So not only are you an evil, biased news agency which sides with the oppressor, you're also very stupid.
Dana Takruri's videos are completely sold and packaged for millennials. The only things she covers are identity politics and being apologist for Qatar's Muslim Brotherhood rhetoric on Syria, blaming everything on Assad and ISIS, and she, of course, upholds the myth of the moderate rebels. AJ Plus, where she works, is state-run Qatari media. Qatar backs the Muslim Brotherhood, which attacked the United States in 1993, hitting the World Trade Centers. Of course, they didn't do that by themselves. The FBI helped them cook up the bomb. Josie Hadass from Mossad was involved. It was a mess. But according to our official story, even, the Muslim Brotherhood attacked the World Trade Center in 1993, and Youssef, one of these plotters, was central in the Bojinka hijacking plot from the Philippines, where they're going to take 17 different airplanes and crash them into places like Los Angeles and San Francisco. That didn't work. They got busted. He was thrown in jail, but his uncle went on to become the mainstay plotter for 9/11. Which Saudi Arabia and Qatar both finance. Saudi princes finance Osama Basnan and his wife through Riggs Bank, and in tandem with that, Omar Bayoumi and his wife, and they set up two of the hijackers, Al-Hazmi and Al-Mutar, who ended up flying into the Pentagon. This is known. Our own FBI admits this. Our own Senate investigation admits this. And our own State Department admits that it knows that Qatar and Saudi Arabia are financing ISIS, not so clandestinely. So is it any shock that Qatar's media outfit, which has this Palestinian Uncle Tom on there, are going to say that everything's Assad's fault and they back these Wahhabi extremists? Now, of course, they don't admit they're Wahhabi extremists. They say they're the moderate rebels who only moderately behead and starve people to death. But that's exactly what they are. The only moderates in Syria are Assad and the Syrian army. She's Young Turks level identitarian politics on the one hand, and just like Hillary Clinton and the rest of them in the establishment, they want to say the myth of moderate rebels and blame everything on Assad and Putin and everyone's I don't like as a Russian hacker, yada yada. Millennials fall for this crap because it's packaged for Facebook videos, AJ Plus, all in English, California accent, no more than 2 or 3 minutes long, lots of little graphics and cartoons, very crass, very simplistic. It's so bad. How the hell does someone get on there with AJ Plus and fool people? Why would you believe the media from Qatar, which wanted to blame the uprising in Benghazi on an internet film that came out in July, even though there were prior attempts on Ambassador Stevens' life to the film being released. And that's just freaking ridiculous. But of course, that's something the Clinton campaign said too. She was Secretary of State, and they said, oh yeah, it's the anniversary of 9/11, but that's got nothing to do with it. They're just mad about a film on YouTube that had less than 2,000 views in English, making fun of the Prophet. Right. No. They botched an operation, that's what happened. And all these surplus weapons from the hub in Benghazi, which they set up, end up in Syria, financing these, first FSA, now it's called ISIS, but financing these rebel mercenaries who get fat paychecks from Qatar and Saudi Arabia. But there are a lot of people that they like AJ Plus, because AJ Plus does all the racial and sexual politics, and they support Hamas. Well, Hamas is not good for Palestine at all. Hamas is the enemy Israel needs. It's like there's this big monster and they throw spaghetti at it just to give it a pretext to pound the hell out of Gaza collectively. Turn off AJ Plus. Al Jazeera is a shit network. You shouldn't listen to it. You shouldn't read it. It's just as bad as CNN. It's worse than CNN. It's just, well, really, they're all, I mean, CNN may be worse. They sold the weapons of mass destruction myth on Iraq and all that. But AJ Plus English is really just as bad. They're completely anti-Assad, the only moderate force in Syria. They lie constantly. And even in their two-minute videos, they contradict themselves. And they peddle lies. They use the same pictures of the same child in several different cities. I mean, it's over the top. And they took the babies out of the incubators and threw them on the cold floor type of propaganda. It's terrible. Turn it off. Stop falling for it. And I see a lot of people who are good on Palestine, like Rula Jabril types, completely swallow the narrative when it comes to Syria. Assad was the president from 2000 to 2011 for 11 years without any incident. He took in Palestinian refugees and took care of them. His father fought the Israelis and took 30% of the Golan Heights back and added it to Syria. It was theirs originally. For 11 years, he's president. And then suddenly, just like in Ukraine, there are snipers shooting police to provoke a reaction. It was Operation Ajax-style hitmen, CIA-style hitmen, creating an incident. And then what do? They flood them with mercenaries. This is not rebellion from within Syria. These are foreign mercenaries, terrorists, attacking a sovereign state. They're not rebels. They're proxy forces, like the Contras in Nicaragua, only less organic than that even. Like Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was, that's not what they were called at the time, but a bunch of foreign fighters that went to Afghanistan to fight the Soviets. Well, this is a bunch of foreign fighters in Syria fighting the Syrians. It's Al-Qaeda 3.0. And trust me, this relationship between Al-Qaeda in the U.S. and Syria and Al-Qaeda in the U.S. and Afghanistan before that and was there during 9/11, I can prove it and did. And this ties in the Israelis and the Saudis intricately. It's a 5-hour film. It's called The Empire Unmasked. It's nothing but primary sources and documentation. I back up everything I say. You click that link below and you can purchase that film right now.
Let us now listen to Everything That You Need to Know About Aleppo Was Wrong by Vanessa Beasley.
Maybe if you don't mind giving our viewers just a couple of words about your background, where you come from, what you do, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. I'm British born. My father was a British diplomat, British ambassador to the Middle East throughout most of his career. That's what gave me the interest in the Middle East. I spent some time in Gaza as a peace activist, lived there in 2012 through the Israeli bombing campaign at the end of 2012. And then obviously developed an interest in writing about my experience, which led to my being involved with various organizations that are covering the Syria crisis as independent investigative analysts and researchers. I write predominantly for 21st Century Wire, and the articles have also been printed, published at Mint Press.
Good, that's great. Well, I don't need to tell you that this has been a really dramatic week when it comes to Syria and Aleppo. We saw yesterday the State Department spokesman John Kirby. He warned the Russians that if they continue fighting and assisting the Syrian government, more Russian lives will be lost, more Russian planes will be shot down. A very chilling thing for him to say. He said Russians will be coming home in body bags. It sounds like a threat, and you might just say it's typical of John Kirby's blowhard style of speaking. But when you couple that with the fact that during the ceasefire that lasted about a week and ended a few days ago, the U.S. and its allies were shipping literally tons of anti-aircraft rockets to their rebels in and around Aleppo. You could see a situation where you would have a Russian plane shot down with American-provided missiles, U.S. and U.K.-provided missiles. That is very, very frightening. Kirby also said, John Kerry said that the U.S. would suspend cooperation with the Russians unless the attacks on eastern Aleppo cease. We hear a lot about Aleppo in the media in the U.S., and Vanessa, I know you won't be shocked to hear that the U.S. mainstream media gets it all wrong. I'm going to read a couple of headlines that I just pulled at random from today, and then I'm going to toss it back to you to let me know whether these are right or wrong. Here's the Washington Post, the paper of record for Washington, D.C. Darkness and fear in Aleppo as the bombs rain down. Washington Times, U.S. pressed to prevent Aleppo bloodbath as residents sit in their homes waiting to die. New York Times, Vladimir Putin's outlaw state. New York Times, the brutal strategy behind Russia's massacres in Syria. That's a little flavor of our media over here, Vanessa. How accurate is that in your experience? You just returned from a trip to Aleppo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're seeing such an amplification of this anti-Russia, anti-Syria propaganda right now. And it's very simply because the Syrian Arab army and their allies are advancing through eastern Aleppo, and they're routing the U.S. and NATO-backed terrorists that are occupying that area. This is a very important point to make, because the majority of the Western media in the U.K. as well as in the U.S. are very much portraying Aleppo as a sort of homogeneous city. That's not true. We're talking here very clearly the tale of two cities, if you like. Aleppo has been divided by the terrorist invasion that happened around 2012. Right from the very beginning, Aleppo has resisted any attempts to pull it into the so-called mythical revolution. And because of that fact, the invasion that happened in 2012 has inflicted punitive measures on Western Aleppo, if you like, because they were responsible for resisting the armed revolution. 600,000 civilians fled from eastern Aleppo into western Aleppo very early on when the terrorists invaded. Those that are left, there's probably around, according to the Aleppo Medical Association that we met with when we went to Aleppo, there's around 200,000, maybe even less now, people left in eastern Aleppo. At least a quarter of that, if not more, are terrorists and their families. The civilians that are in eastern Aleppo, the majority of them are being held hostage. We were given many witness testimonies that stated to us they have family that is still in East Aleppo that are terrified to leave to come into the government-held Western Aleppo, because if they leave, members of their family, their friends, their relations will be murdered by the terrorists. So fundamentally, these terrorists are using these civilians as human shields and then declaring to the media that's accepting their propaganda that these civilians are under threat. The only reason they're under threat is because they're being imprisoned in this area by the terrorists and used as human shields.
You already said something that sort of breaks with the mainstream narrative, because for any rational person, you say that 600,000 people escaped from eastern Aleppo into western Aleppo. Well, if the mainstream narrative is correct, which is that Assad simply enjoys murdering his own people, then why on earth would people go from liberated East Aleppo into the realm of the murderous tyrant Assad in Western Aleppo? Something doesn't make sense here.
Absolutely. You've absolutely hit the button. And in fact, what people need to realize is that 90% of the internally displaced people, the people that have been driven out of their towns and villages by the terrorist invasion, the genetically modified terrorists, whatever brand name they're given, they are terrorists. And that's according to the Syrian people. That's not my opinion. But these internally displaced people, 90% have gone into government-held areas for protection. That's over 7 million people that have been displaced inside Syria that have fled to government-held areas. And let's just also dismantle the whole sectarian idea, because if you go to the coastal areas, for example, like Tartus and Latakia, you will find there are Sunni, there are Alawite, there are Christians, there are all manner of denominations that have fled to that area to cohabit and coexist side by side in taking refuge from the terrorist attacks and massacres that are going on in their homes and villages. So you're absolutely right to make that point. And the other point is there is a huge campaign of dehumanization of the Syrian people by the Western media. Yesterday, I saw that those that are in West Aleppo were being described as Assad supporters. This is a complete lie. These people are not necessarily Assad supporters. They may be against Assad. The difference is they don't believe in killing Syria to improve Syria. And that's a direct quote from one of the doctors working in West Aleppo. That's another point to make. They talk all the time about the last doctor in East Aleppo. They again create this entire campaign about the hospitals and the last doctor in East Aleppo. There are 4,120 doctors working in Aleppo, right? And 200 have joined that number in the last 6 months, registered with the Aleppo Medical Association. And the government has sent doctors from West Aleppo paying their salaries into eastern Aleppo to treat not only terrorists, but the civilians that are being held by the terrorists there. And those that have stopped them coming in are the terrorists, the so-called rebels or opposition, as they are described in the Western media. The hospitals, there are three main hospitals in East Aleppo, only three. And there are seven basic health centers that don't have the facilities to carry out operations and so on. Those three hospitals, in Al-Dakak, in Al-Zara, and the Omar Abdulaziz Hospital, which was created by the Grand Mufti Hassoun, are all occupied by terrorists. The top floors are being used as sniping towers. Again, this is not described. And they will treat terrorists as a priority over civilians. The Al-Quds Hospital, which has been in the news recently, which, by the way, was destroyed, according to all mainstream media, in April. It was reduced to a smoldering heap, as per their reports. It's now suddenly rebuilt in the last few months and is now top of the agenda again in the propaganda. Al-Quds Hospital is a terrorist triage center that has been set up by the terrorists. It was visited on the 12th of August, prior to our visit, by Sheikh Abdullah Muhizini, who is the Riyadh-educated and funded leader of Jaish al-Fatah, the Armory of Conquest, chief trainer of suicide bombers, and chief terrorist funder, armor, and executor.
Sounds like a nice guy. You know, for anyone who... For anyone who might suggest that you're being a little emphatic with your words, calling the East Aleppo terrorists, I would simply remind our viewers that Colonel Steve Warren, who's a Pentagon spokesperson, said not long ago that Eastern Aleppo is in the hands of the Nusra Front, which is Al-Qaeda, which we all recognize as terrorists. They had something to do with something that happened in the U.S. on 9/11. Yet somehow it seems that the U.S. is desperate to protect an area that its own government says is occupied and under siege by Al-Qaeda terrorists. You know, you can forgive the viewers for being confused about this.
Absolutely. Yeah, and actually, I can easily forgive the viewers, trust me. Even for me, someone that's been there and has been writing on this for ages now. There's 22, I call them genetically modified terrorists, because we can't call them moderates, we can't call them anything other than terrorists. And again, I have to stress here, that comes from every single Syrian person that I met across the governorates that I travel to. They do not even consider there is any differentiation between these terrorists. They are all criminals. They are all mass murderers. They are all rapists. They are all torturers. They are all abusers of their children and their families. And yesterday, in fact, you're quite right, 80% of those 200,000 people that are in East Aleppo have been described as being Nusra Front. So yesterday, in fact, while the media was amplifying and megaphoning the propaganda that was being provided to them by the terrorist factions inside East Aleppo, mortars were being rained down upon civilians in West Aleppo. We had descriptions of it being like hell yesterday. There was a six-year-old child, Pamela, I need to get her name right, Kazanji, who was hit by a mortar. She's 6 years old. She's now paralyzed. And at the same time, the Free Idlib Army, which is, again, the new genetically modified version of the U.S. terrorists, that are in Idlib were firing Bulgarian, among other countries, supplied Grad missiles into northern Aleppo. And one family in Al-Zara, which is in northern Aleppo countryside, four of their children from the age of 11 down to 1.5 were dreadfully injured by these missile attacks yesterday. None of this is mentioned. These terrorists that are called rebels, that are called moderate rebels, that are called opposition, are massacring Syrian people. They are not Syrian people who are Assad supporters. They are Syrian people, whether they are Christian, whether they are Shia, whether they are Sunni, whether they are Alawite. Every single one of them will say to you, we are Syrian first and foremost. And we are not here, even if we disagree with our government, we're not here to kill our country in order to improve it.
Yeah, and you know, it might be difficult for a lot of Americans to understand or to believe that its government is siding with terrorists. But, you know, Dr. Paul and I did a show on this, I think, yesterday, where we pointed out this is not unprecedented. After the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan in 1979, the U.S. very actively supported the Mujahideen, which then became al-Qaeda, bin Laden. So there is a precedent to this, to the U.S. backing terrorists, because the U.S. goal, and I think you'll agree with this, Vanessa, has always been regime change in Syria. Everything else is just for show. The reality is they have got to change the regime in Syria, and that's the goal. But I want to go into the propaganda a little bit, because the propaganda has been like nothing we have ever seen on this, the Western propaganda. And now here's something I know that you know about, because I read your writing about it. And these are the so-called white helmets. And they're portrayed here in the U.S. as selfless humanitarians that rush in the face of danger and save little children from the rubble. And they're always photographed doing this. But there is a different side to these so-called white helmets. And I think you know quite a bit about it, Vanessa.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for bringing them up. As we know, they're sort of being fated and celebrated and iconized, really, as heroes and saviors of humanity. One of the things that I did while I was in Syria, and I did it deliberately as part of my investigation into this group, was I visited the real Syria civil defense in Aleppo, in Tartus, in Latakia, and the headquarters in Damascus, which is right in the Jaish al-Islam territory, very close by to Jobar. So they're constantly under attack from terrorist mortar fire and snipers and explosive bullets. What I found out from the real Syria civil defense basically backed up the research that I'd been doing up until then. This is fundamentally, the white helmets, in my opinion, are fundamentally an attempt by the US and by NATO states to create a shadow state inside Syria, which again is a very familiar pattern. They did this in Iraq, and they are definitely doing this in Syria. The white helmets, despite saying that they are an NGO and that they're independent and that they have no funding from interested parties in the conflict in Syria, they're receiving probably now around $100 million at a conservative estimate from the US via USAID, $23 million. From the UK, we had Boris Johnson yesterday saying that he was going to up the ante to £32 million. Japan is now involved. Denmark, Holland, Germany the other day confirmed that they would give them $7 million. Holland. So we have a cabal, a sort of a coalition of the white helmets, if you like, and $100 million we're supposed to believe is going to fund 3,000 operatives in a supposed cobbled together humanitarian NGO. This is the kind of money that you put into an army. It's not the kind of money that you put into a very simple NGO. We know for a fact they fabricate evidence. That's been proven in my reports. We know for a fact that they are sectarian. When the Madaya propaganda broke in January 2016, they were photographed calling for the burning and destruction of two Idlib villages, Kafraya and Fua, that have been under siege by the U.S. terrorists, al-Sham, since March 2015, and have lost 1,700 civilians under shelling and sniper fire. And the White Helmets were calling for their further destruction. We have numerous photographs showing them armed, showing them basically acting as terrorists, and then quickly putting on the white helmet when they're needed to make another promotional video. I mean, I'm being flippant here, but this is genuinely what is happening. when I spoke to the Syria Civil Defense, the real Syria Civil Defense, and again, I will reiterate, the white helmets are being used to eradicate yet another Syrian state institution, which is the real Syria Civil Defense that has been in existence for 63 years, since 1953. It's registered with the International Civil Defense Organization, which is affiliated to the UN, to the WHO, to OCHA, to Red Cross and Red Crescent. It's a fully certified civil defense organization. So why are the millions not going to this organization to help save civilians in Syria? This organization, the real Syria Civil Defense, is working in both terrorist and civilian areas, and it's rescuing people every day with no recognition from Western media. And not one Western media pundit has gone to visit the real Syria Civil Defense in 5.5 years of war. That's criminal in my book. Mm. The white helmets, just very quickly coming back to them, when I spoke to the Syria Civil Defense, particularly in Aleppo, they told me that in 2012, when the terrorists invaded, they took over the real Syria Civil Defense units there. These terrorists then later became the White Helmets. One of the crew members of the real Syria Civil Defense that's now in West Aleppo, it gets a little bit convoluted, he told me basically that when they came, they said to him, they threatened him, they said, you have to stay and work with us, you have to help us set this up. He escaped. He left his family behind. He had no choice. When he escaped, the so-called white helmets put his name on all the checkpoints. So if he were to come back to visit his family in East Aleppo, he would be executed. Mm. They stole ambulances, all of the ambulances, three of their fire engines. They murdered other real civil defense members. They kidnapped others. They drove others out of East Aleppo into West Aleppo. And this is not an isolated incident. Basically, this same procedure happened in Idlib, in Deir ez-Zor, in Raqqa, across Syria, in other words. So, you know, this organization is basically, as far as I'm concerned, they're a terrorist support group. They're acting as terrorists in many instances, and they are terrorists. And yet they're being described by our governments as humanitarian first responders.
Well, they're also described as volunteers. So if all of these guys are volunteers, honestly, where does this $100 million go? I mean, even a super big NGO, even, you know, the Heritage Foundation or something, $100 million goes a long way. Where do you think this money's going? Everyone's a volunteer, yet they've got $100 million.
I think it's a front for funding the arms trade into Syria, to be quite honest. And if you think about it, this is a perfect front. They're first responders. They're traveling backwards. They're trained in Turkey, so they're coming from Turkey into Syria all the time with trucks, with fire engines. If you look at the white helmets in Idlib, their YouTube videos, it's like a parade of all the equipment they're being given by their various sponsors in the EU and in the US. So they're the perfect conduit, they're the perfect artery into the terrorist-held areas to bring in arms, weapons, and equipment. And I believe that this is where this 100 million is going. And by the way, they're also trained by James Le Mesurier, who is a very sort of colorful ex-British military mercenary that has connections back to organizations like Blackwater that are famous for being death squad organizers, basically, for the CIA, and were heavily funded by Bush and then Obama. I think Obama gave around $250 million to Blackwater in order to continue carrying out Blackwater outreach assassination operations. Blackwater became Academy, and then they got merged into various other groups with which James Le Mesurier has very strong contacts. Hmm. So, you know, this is not some grassroots indigenous humanitarian organization. This is a huge operation that's going on. And not only that, the entire war propaganda, the dirty war on Syria war propaganda, is underpinned by this organization. And so I think this is why we're seeing this incredible rush to give credibility to this organization. And we have to worry about what sort of tool this organization will be in the hands of whoever is elected next in the United States. Mm. If it's Hillary Clinton.
So there you have it. You have different voices that should be on the mainstream and alternative media, but are not. And if we heard from these people, all credible, all articulating their points, all with background information and documentation, that certainly would have the power of changing the average person's perspective on the conflict in Syria and the war on truth by those who perpetrate fake news. I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you for listening.
There's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying.